A62. Number 19B.
So we come to love, the whole tone of love. Yeah, what do you feel is here new about the whole David story? Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Manhood found in divinity.
Yes. Manhood found in divinity. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And have you some inkling why that would be an epitome for all that happened there? Yes. Yes, yes, please. Yes, I mean, just the pinpoint thing.
How the human strength yields to grace.
What is the, how the human? Yeah?
Well, David let,
how the human yields to grace, you say?
Yeah.
Did I understand? Yeah, wonderful. Yes, yes. It's a great giving up of everything, huh? For the grace of God, for the glory of God, for the praise of God. Yes, yes. Which way do you see it in the story?
David left, was it Barzillai? Barzillai? I don't know how to pronounce it.
All right, I'm glad you don't know it either. Yeah.
Stay behind, someone who had helped him and been very kind to him, and took represented grace with him.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He took grace with him, huh, and left everything behind, huh? Even if they had been helpful to him, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And there came the rivalry of Israel and Judah. Right? Yes. The separation
of Israel
and Judah.
Mm-hmm. Now, how does that apply to the story of love? Yes.
Whatever is not like itself.
Yes. Yes. Love forces to us to give up everything that is unlike love. Huh?
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Very good. So you could see that in that story of Barzillai and Chimham, huh?
Yes.
Or whatever that name is. Yes. He left. Yeah, what was really Barzillai doing for those who didn't know quite what he was?
Hadn't he been helping David during a period of his...
Yes. 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 He helped him then come back to his throne and led him through the... over Jordan, I think it was, huh? Yes. Yeah. He conducted him over Jordan when... David was still hidden away and fled away to come back to Jerusalem to take on his kingship again, yes? Hmm. What else do you see in these stories here?
The calculus of materiality is finally ended in the four sons of Goliath being done away.
What is done away?
The four sons of Goliath.
Oh, the four sons of Goliath, yes. Yes, yes. Even and those had to give way, huh? Yeah.
The calculus of materiality.
Yes, yes. Uh-huh. So, do I have to tell the story to the Sunday school story? Shall we do that? All right. Well, the very first thing you read there is that David stopped lamenting over Absalom. Now, really in love, huh, you can't lament anymore over a situation, or you don't see love, because love is never without its manifestation. Love is never without loveliness. Therefore, as long as we feel that there is something to be lamented about, we don't have a sense of love, because love and love's idea is one. Therefore, only at that point where we begin to see that all that is going on is love and love's idea, and therefore see that what happened with Absalom is in the line of the idea, and is therefore in the plane of love. You have a great sense of plane coming in, that everything happens within a plane, though we don't understand that plane, you know. In spite that everything seems to happen humanly, which doesn't seem to be planful, it's still a plane of love operating. So that here he began to see that this was the very best thing that could happen. Actually, we know what would have happened with Israel if Absalom would have become king instead of Solomon. The kingdom would have broken into bits and pieces right after David's death. So there we get the first inclination that love always operates as the plan of love, and that there is nothing to be lamented about. And if we begin to see that, at that point, you know, he was still, David was still, he had fled away from Jerusalem because he thought that Absalom was king, and so now he had to return to Jerusalem, so in order to fulfill his message. So on that way, he began to realize that even those that cursed him before, like now Shinai or Shinai, what is that name? Shinai. See, he was the one that when David had to flee from Jerusalem before, in the tone of truth, before Absalom, Shinai cursed him endlessly, threw stones at him, etc. But when he came back, he helped him. He was the one that had completely changed and came to make peace with him. Love. So again, one can see all the former obstacles, all the former enemies are now drawn in again into the all-embracing sense of a plan of love. Then, when David was, in flight, naturally, the son of Saul, Mephibosheth, that lost son of Saul that he had taken in and fed him and given him the land back, and so naturally he took that chance when David had to flee to side with Absalom. And so poor boy came back again. And what did David do? He didn't say, "Now you really treated me badly, you know. You were a real stinker. I kick you out." No, he forgave him. See? So you had one after the other of those who betrayed him, who were against him, who cursed him when he was down. You know, you always get that. The moment you are no more on the throne, no good is anymore. You are no more good. You know, John Dooley could be the best lecturer, best teacher, and the top of everything. The moment he was in disgrace in Boston, he was no good anymore. Everything was wrong about him. That happens to everyone, that goes through the valley. Coming back again, they began to see he wasn't so bad at all, after all. There's something good about them. So here, one after the other, came back, like we said before, Barzillai or so. He too came and said, "Though I'm very old, and though I can't go along with you up to Jerusalem, But I do my best. I show you the way over the Jordan. Apparently that must have been very difficult. I don't know why. I show you the way so that you don't go astray. In that period then, David's general again, Joab, comes in again. You know, that matter-of-fact general, with a terrific sense of righteousness. This is right, and the other is wrong. What is right is right, and what is not right must be decapitated. So he had his sword. The sword of truth was his real strength. But at the point now of love, now, if you think that Joab can also be a side of David's character, at that point Joab went out to punish a city that has been fighting against David. And when he came to that city, and the city was nearly ready to fall, and he wanted to come in and kill everybody there, there appeared on the wall a woman. And a woman talked him out of that business. She talked him right out. Isn't that the wonderful nature of a Joab? That righteous a male that suddenly was touched by the woman's sense. Because she talked him out of it and said, look here, you don't achieve anything. By killing your enemies, you don't achieve anything. And was arguing with him, and so he made a peace with them and withdrew. That was, so to say, Joab's last appearing in the story. He too was, so to say, reconciled to his true womanhood nature. Can you see that story here? And David, the whole story David shows a great sense of the appearing of womanhood in Israel. Israel was really a type of the male, of the warrior, of fighting for their land and fighting for their rights. And the woman in this story gets more and more important, and she wins always. She wins always. Here, with Joab, it was the same thing. So he made peace. And it is said that David went no more into battle. Can you hear? He made peace, and David went no more into battle. It is as if Joab would be the male sense in David that was now reconciled to the point of seeing there is nothing in making war. You don't gain anything in making war. Keep your eye on the idea, keep your eye on the ball, and bless the idea, and don't try to fight your enemies. So he began to see that, and then we have that wonderful praise, David's praise. It's a long praise where he's praising, so to say, his true womanhood, the fulfillment of manhood as womanhood. And it's a song of praise that I think it's very well known, that song of praise as David's song. And in that song of praise, he said he could see that he was raised up on high, I think is your English verb. He was raised up on high to an everlasting covenant. You get the sense of that peace. The moment he could see peace, he could see that he is an idea that would always work for the glory of God, that would always be brought back to God, into union with God for an everlasting covenant. And in that everlasting covenant, he made again a mistake. Quite interesting. David numbered his people. And for that, the Lord wasn't happy about him. It's, you see what happened. He was beginning to see the universal sense of the idea. Therefore, there is peace, there is no enemy. And he began to see that universal idea in terms of numbers, of people, of warriors. How strong is my army? He couldn't quite see that we don't have to deal with numbers, but with ideas. Don't we make that mistake? Aren't we apt to make that mistake? Why are we not more? How many are we? And not knowing that a great number could be the downfall of this idea at the moment, that if we would be flooded with a lot of unprepared people who come to us and who can't understand us, what we teach, that this could kill us right off. We have to see that the idea alone matters and not people, not the number of people. The idea will take care of itself. I quite agree. I'm very happy if I have more people in my classes. That's true. And we are happy. But we have to be careful that we don't think that numbers would do it. They can be a burden to us. And so it was to David. And so the Lord said, you did something wrong. And he offered him a reconciliation. I can't go into the terms that God offered him in a good business treaty. Either you do this or this or this. He had three possibilities to do it. But at least he did choose the right one, namely the spiritual way to solve that question again. And so he did choose the right method and set up an altar. You know, an altar was always a symbol for the glory of God, to which you bring everything you have for the sacrifice. So the story there runs that all that the people brought to him from the whole of Israel and Judah as gifts, he didn't accept them for him, but put it on the altar and offered it to God. Can you see? At that moment he got the true idea of the universality. It was no more a question how much warriors do I have, how big is now my worldly kingdom, but he could see that everything that the people offered belongs not to him, but belongs to God. And he put it right back to God, to the altar, and brought everything that was given to him as a sacrifice unto God. And, now comes the end, and the plague was stayed from Israel. That's the end of the story. And the plague stayed in Israel or from Israel, I don't know. But you get the tone, huh? You really get the sense of fulfillment that at the moment that he began to see that his whole life work is not his life work, but God's life work, God's plan, and belongs therefore to him, and to God, and not to David. So until we see that very clearly, we'll still have the plagues coming up on us, because we still will feel, did I do the job right? Whereas we should see, God does his plan aright. He fulfills his plan the way he wants to fulfill, and we better give everything back to the operation of God. So that's the tone of love. Yes? Isn't this last tone very distinct again from the tone of truth. Whereas in truth, you always had to see that he had to see how to work out his manhood. His manhood as manhood and womanhood as one. In the tone of love, he began to see that this idea of manhood has to be given back to God. That the idea must be put back into love, into the plane of love, and seen that it is not our life that we are considering, that it is God's own operation of himself symbolized as our manhood. But it belongs to the divine principle. We can't add anything to it. We can't add anything to that which is always in the realm of reality. Yes? That's the story. I said that we could perhaps compare quickly this story that you can now keep more or less in mind with Matthew's story of another man, the Christ man, born of spirit, as David was born of matter, of the flesh. David had to work out his manhood. See, we always see that divinely we are the sons of God, but humanly we have to make ourselves the son of God. And those two have to go hand in hand, because the first one is the theory about it, the fact about it. The second one is the activity of working it out. Now, in Matthew, you have the tone of mind as what? There again, you have the parent mind, because he gives the genealogy of Jesus, starting right way back with Abraham, and showing how through the genealogy from Abraham over David up to Joseph, there is an uninterrupted flow of begetting, the creative mind, to the point where Jesus then appeared, but not from Joseph, but from Mary's consciousness, the true spiritual parent mind. Again, like in David, you have there Hannah's sense, first of barrenness, then seeing that there is a solution to it, and therefore conceiving of the idea of salvation, the idea of prophecy. In Jesus' story, when you come to spirit, you have the three baptisms, the baptism of spirit, just as in the David story, we have there more on the human level. We have there that David and Jonathan had to baptize them in the spiritual qualities. It isn't there in David, it is not, you see, in the David story, things don't come from above, like in Jesus' story. Jesus came from the Father, direct from above. And David came not from above, he had to work out his way. So we always get in the David story more the human qualities and the human activities that reflect those absolute divine facts. Here, the baptism of spirit, the purity of spirit in Jesus' history was now in David, the application of spiritual qualities. In Jesus' story, in soul, we have the wilderness experience, the temptations, the three temptations, again proving the safety of the idea, but he did it without sin. Whereas in the story of David, he had to go through the wilderness step by step and prove step by step his safety. Then, in Matthew, you have as principal the Sermon on the Mount, namely, showing now the whole principle of teaching, the whole system of the Christian teaching, the true spiritual government. Whereas in the David story, we have the fact that now Saul lost its government, its kingship, and that David gained his kingship by trusting on that principle. In Jesus' life, when you come to life, you at once come to all the healing cases. One healing after the other flows out, the healing of sickness, the healing of a lack, the demonstration of life as multiplication, multiplying the fishes and the bread and so on. You had a terrific sense that there was a terrific outpouring of life and abundance. In the David story, he had to see that he gave abundance to every situation. He had to be father to his kingdom. When you come to truth in Jesus' story, you have also the compound idea there, and he shows there that every true idea in the universe is contributing to his wholeness of manhood. Everything that happens starts right out that even the little us that he was, which he was riding up to Jerusalem, had to be there at the right place at the right time to serve him. Everything in the universe served him to fulfill the compound idea man. Whereas in the David, as we have seen in David's story, mortal consciousness had to come out of mortal consciousness and accept for himself the universal sense of man. And in love, naturally, in Jesus' story, again you had a higher sense of love, namely that whole sense of crucifixion, resurrection, ascension, that whole time there, just showing that Jesus just went through that whole experience without being touched, without any smell of fire on him. He went right through the fire. Nothing could touch him. He was glorifying that principle without any smell of fire on him, whereas David had to prove it step by step that he would be able to go back to God and did everything for the glory of God. Yes. But you see the very a parallel sense that in those two stories, but on a different level. Okay.